Radio Prague News. President Václav Klaus has said he would be against a minority Social Democrat government supported by the communists. Czech Human Rights Commissioner Svatopluk Karásek strongly opposes plans by the National Party to erect a World War II memorial at Lety. And 10 Christian churches have urged the President and the Senate to reject a bill on registered same-sex partnerships. President Václav Klaus would be against a minority Social Democrat government supported by the communists. In an interview in Thursday's Hospodarské noviny, Mr. Klaus said he had made his opposition to such an arrangement clear when appointing previous governments. But senior Social Democrat Petr Vicha said the president had no constitutional right to block a government and that it was strange he was setting conditions 6 months before elections. The Czech Republic's Human Rights Commissioner Svatopluk Karásek strongly opposes plans by the country's right national party to erect a memorial at Lety in South Bohemia. In 1942, over 1,200 Czech Romanis were interned in a Czech-run camp at the site before being sent to the concentration camp at Auschwitz. The National Party intends to erect the memorial with an inscription that refutes claims that the site was run by Czechs and that it was a concentration camp. 10 churches in the Czech Republic have called on to Czech President Václav Klaus and the Senate to reject a bill on registered same-sex partnerships. The bill was approved by the lower house in mid-December and has yet to get the green light from the Senate and the President before it becomes law. One of the church's arguments against it is that the Czech Republic has one of the lowest birth rates in the world and cannot afford to encourage homosexual partnerships. A court of appeals has extended the prison sentence for former communist secret police agent Jiří Šimák. In 2002, a Prague court found him guilty of torturing political prisoners in 1981 and sentenced him to 3 years. The court of appeals has now increased the sentence to 4 years in prison. At least 2 former dissidents have come forward describing how Mr. Šimák tortured them as part of the secret police operation Asanace, or Clearance, aimed at forcing opponents of the communist regime to flee the country. And a quick look at the weather. The next few days will have overcast skies with occasional snow and daytime temperatures between -4 and 0 degrees Celsius. I'm Dita Asiedu, and that's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague, and I'm Ian Willoughby. Today, have some Czech Romani women been sterilized against their will? Prague's Jewish Museum celebrates 100 years. We'll have all the business news, and later in the arts, we meet a very colorful musician who plays dozens of different instruments, including the ancient Slovak fujara. Stay tuned for that. Some time ago, Helena Ferenčíková, a Czech Romani woman, claimed she'd been forced to undergo sterilization during the communist era because the regime didn't want the Romani population expanding. Her case set off many more complaints from Romani mothers, who said they'd received similar treatment. Many of them wrote to the ombudsman, Otakar Matel, for help, and several have since taken their case to court. Daniela Lazarova has the story.
As the complaints piled up, the Ombudsman's office launched its own investigation into the matter. Its conclusion was shocking. The Ombudsman said his office had collected sufficient evidence to suggest that at least 50 Romani women living in the Czech Republic and formerly communist Czechoslovakia were forcibly sterilized in the years between 1979 and 2001. Kumar Vishwanathan has been working for several years to mediate between Roma and the authorities. He explains what went on.
During the process of childbirth, they were given a paper to sign saying that they consent to C-section. At the same time, sterilization was also written in the paper. Sometimes, in some cases, the women were informed that they're going to be sterilized they have to sign this up. And the women signed it, but the women didn't have any time to think over these things, discuss with their partners. Some of the women thought that it is a kind of temporary arrangement, something like an intrauterine device, or it's reversible. That they never thought in terms that they will never ever have children.
This means of controlling the Romani population was allegedly done on the grounds of a communist directive that remained in force up until 1991, that is 2 years after the fall of communism. Social workers were actively involved in the practice. Kumar Vishwanathan again.
The social workers would come to the hospitals and get the women signed. The social workers would threaten the families that if you don't get sterilized, we will take away your money. During the communist regime, the Czechoslovak socialist government had a program, a law, asking for the control of the Roma population. It is a eugenically motivated law. And the monetary incentive was a part of the communist government's eugenics plan to limit the Roma population.
The first court ruling on enforced sterilization was awaited with anticipation, since it was expected to set an important precedent. Helena Ferencikova from Ostrava won her case, and the court ruled that the maternity hospital in question should acknowledge malpractice and apologize to her. Mrs. Ferencikova says this is not enough and is demanding £1 million in compensation. Several other women have followed her example, and the enforced sterilization suits will be settled on a case-by-case basis. Roma rights advocates think there should be a blanket form of compensation for all Roma women who can prove their case. By far the most disturbing aspect of this story is that there are some who suggest the practice of enforced sterilizations may not have been completely eradicated. Kumar Vishwanathan again.
We are convinced that there has been no significant change in medical practice over the past decade. We are convinced that the medical practice here in this country is still paternalistic. Doctor has a paternalistic opposed to a partner kind of attitude to relationship to the patient. And as long as that doesn't change, we would be always wary of that forced sterilization can happen.
So when is sterilization performed in the Czech Republic, and what precedes it? According to Jaroslav Feireisel, the head of the Podolí Maternity Hospital, the currently valid law, which dates back to the 1970s, stipulates that doctors can perform sterilization for health reasons or at a patient's request. In either case, the matter is discussed by a sterilization commission made up of several leading experts. The patient must request to undergo sterilization in writing and sign two separate sets of papers on different occasions to confirm that she understands what the procedure entails. She is free to change her mind up until the last minute in the operating theatre. The only case where a surgeon may perform this without a patient's approval is if the woman's life is in danger, for instance, if he finds extensive tumorous growth during an operation. Dr. Feireisel says that possibly the most controversial part of the law, and one that relates to the Roma cases, is the recommendation that sterilization is advisable for health reasons following a second or third cesarean section.
To jsou takzvané sterilizace po císařských řezech, protože
As regards the practice of sterilization after a second cesarean section, yes, that is recommended by the present health law. This legislation is 30 years old and needs to be amended because it does not reflect the progress medicine has made in the past 3 decades. Some maternity hospitals abide by this recommendation, which I do not fully agree with. But even so, sterilization cannot be undertaken without all of the steps I mentioned, explaining it to the patient, getting her approval, and getting approval from the sterilization commission. Hospitals usually perform this 6 weeks after the birth of the child.
The 30-year-old law on health care is about to be amended. Meanwhile, the Ombudsman's Office has put forward a series of recommendations as regards sterilizations. They are that a woman should have at least 7 days to make up her mind whether or not to undergo sterilization, and that the hospital should provide an easy-to-understand brochure which explains the procedure and all its implications.
The Jewish Museum in Prague is celebrating its 100th anniversary this year, with a year-long program of concerts, theatre performances and exhibitions. The events will celebrate the centuries of Jewish life in the Czech lands and the substantial cultural contribution of the Jewish community, a community which was decimated by the Holocaust. Rob Cameron spoke to Leo Pavlat, director of the Jewish Museum.
It's a living Jewish community, of course. It's much better than it was during the communist regime. We can speak about revival of the Jewish life in this country. But there is in no way there's a chance to compare it with the pre-war Jewish life in this country, because 80,000 Jews were killed, and of course, and if you add communist era, so of course it's absolutely clear that we cannot be in position in which Jewish community had been before the war.
We are standing in the beautifully restored Spanish synagogue in the heart of Prague's Jewish town. Prague is home to many unique Jewish monuments. Are these monuments to a dead culture, simply tourist attractions, or are they part of a living culture, which is still an important part of Czech society today?
I won't say that it's a dead culture, because as any museum is dead culture. So, of course, we present objects which are haven't been in use in synagogues, but at the same time, they are very eloquent. So they speak about the history of Czech Jews. At the same time, they symbolize those who had been killed during the war. Knowing that, so of course we can say a lot about contemporary life in this world, and of course we can use all these documents and objects in projects and programs which actually speak about contemporary Jewish life.
Now, there is a terrible irony, I suppose, an irony of history, that Prague has such a rich assortment of Jewish artifacts, largely due to the Nazis and due to Hitler, who wanted to create this museum of an extinct race in Prague. Can you tell me more about how that came about?
Your assumption that the Nazis wanted to establish a museum of an extinct race is an assumption. So there are no documents proving that.
So it's something of a myth that Hitler wanted this museum of the people who he had annihilated.
I would say a myth, because we don't know what the Nazis really wanted. But it's absolutely clear that the idea to establish wartime Jewish museum in Prague was not originated by the Nazis.
And does Jewish culture still play an important role in Czech life today?
It depends. Of course, there are some very important cultural events originated by the Jewish community, by Jewish museum, and which are appreciated by everybody. At the same time, compared to the pre-war situation, it's absolutely clear that there are not so many brilliant Jewish artists who lived before the war.
That was Leo Pavlat of the Jewish Museum in Prague on their 100th year anniversary. Now it's Friday, so it's time for the business news, for which I'm joined by Brian Kennedy.
Thanks, Ian. The longest-serving Social Democratic MP, Michael Kraus, has said he will give up two influential functions as head of the Parliamentary Budgetary Committee and Party Deputies Grouping amidst allegations of corruption. Kraus has been under pressure to explain why he agreed to participate in a dubious deal to buy a Ghanaian cocoa bean factory in 2001. The best-selling daily Mladá Fronta Dnes went so far as to suggest that Kraus may have been involved in money laundering.
Meanwhile, on the other side of the political aisle, MP Vladimír Doležal of the centre-right Civic Democrats resigned from Parliament this week. He's under police investigation for allegedly mediating a bribe for a member of a Prague local zoning board worth $35,000. Doležal, too, denies any wrongdoing and will remain on the party ticket for elections this spring.
A record 600,000 cars were manufactured in the Czech Republic last year. Almost 500,000 of these vehicles were produced by Škoda Auto, with the rest made by Toyota, Peugeot, Citroën at a joint venture plant that opened in February 2005. The TPCA plant has the capacity to make many more cars, up to 300,000 a year. A similar number could be produced by South Korea's Hyundai if, as expected, it goes ahead with plans to build a $1.2 billion plant in the city of Ostrava.
And in related news, the Czech State Agency for Attracting Investment, Czech Invest, said on Monday it had helped secure 154 foreign and local investment projects worth $3.1 billion last year. That's a record number of projects. Czech Invest head Tomáš Hruda said the new projects would help create some 22,000 new jobs.
In other news, the Czech crown rose to a record high against the common European currency this week, closing on Monday at 28.70 crowns to the euro. Analysts said they expect the crown to strengthen further this year, as the Central European region will benefit from investors looking for an alternative to the US dollar.
The Czech Statistical Office said this week that 65,000 foreigners hold business licenses in the Czech Republic, an all-time high number. Vietnamese nationals account for nearly one-third of the licenses. Ukrainians make up the next largest group, followed by Slovaks and Russians.
And finally, Unient Communications is to be the first virtual mobile operator in the Czech Republic, with service due to start mid-year. Unient signed an interconnect agreement with Český Telecom this month. It has 200,000 mobile phone numbers with a 799 prefix, but has yet to reach an agreement with an existing operator. It hopes to sign on 100,000 customers this year.
And now, in this week's edition of The Arts, Rob Cameron meets a very interesting musician.
For this week's edition of The Arts here on Radio Prague, I've come to a tiny little studio in a basement in an apartment building in the area Vršovice in Prague 10. And the basement and the studio belongs to an artist who calls himself Svetia. Now, Svetia is a multi-instrumentalist. He means he plays a number of musical instruments. You have an incredible array of instruments hanging on the wall here. Just take me through some of them. This, I believe, is a banjo. Is that right?
Yes, sure, banjo.
followed by some flutes.
Some flutes of different regions of the world.
Where are these from, these flutes?
It's from Slovakia, some from Africa.
Can we hear some?
Yes. For example.
That's Slovak, right? And that one, the one next to it, is African.
Yes, this is something like a bamboo stuff.
Then, next to there, you've got a classical guitar, semi-acoustic guitar, a bass. Right, next to that is something very, very strange looking indeed. What on earth is that?
Okay, this is something like a, really, I don't know the name, but it's a some kind of a Afro instrument, a natural instrument. You can maybe know the sound of, from Scottish pipers, but it's really...
That's African.
Yeah, it is African.
Okay, and next door to that is...
Oh, what do you have? It's a rebab, it's from Egypt instrument, and the rest is something like a small harmonium I received from my sister from Sardinia. It's a really, really strange instrument. That's the problem, that it's impossible to see it.
Yes, I mean, it looks like a lot of bamboo pipes kind of tied together. How on earth do you play that?
Yeah, this is a really strange way of the playing. When I received it, I didn't know how to play it. I just tried to a lot of ways, and after I just find a way.
Mm. Very, very strange indeed. And on the floor here is the instrument that perhaps you're best known for. This is a fujara, which looks to me like a long piece of wood.
Exactly, it's a long piece of wood. It's a big pipe, something like big flute, with a special wood. I don't know the name in English, I'm sorry, but you can just find it. And it's a really traditional, unique instrument of Slovakia.
So this is a Slovak mountain instrument, the fujara.
Yeah, exactly.
How does this sound?
I can just...
Mm-hmm.
strategy, which is one way of playing, and the second way it's something like really quick blowing, which is really typical playing on this instrument, which start the song, for example, this way.
Fantastic. You must need very good lungs to play this instrument.
Yeah, it's really necessary just to don't smoke or just infect.
And then further round the room, again, another stringed instrument. It looks like a huge balalaika or some stringed instrument, but it's not, is it?
It's called mandolin cello.
Mandolin cello?
Yeah, it's a double four strings tuning in the octaves, which really... great sound.
Right, rather sinister sound.
I'm sorry, not from this instrument on the wall is not tuning, because yeah. I will tune it where I will need it record.
Sure, yeah. And then further round we have a banjo.
Yes, it's a typical guitar banjo, very known in all the countries. This is quite interesting.
This instrument. Is quite interesting. This is a saw. Don't tell me you play the saw as well.
Yes, exactly. It's a normal saw from I don't know.
From a hardware shop.
Yeah, from Hornbacher, I don't know what. And it's a
You play it with a bow. I see.
Yeah. I can just play a little few notes.
Fantastic. That must be a lot of fun to play. Tell me then, Sveta, which instrument did you learn first?
First, I was something like a typical guitarist, starting with the 70s with the folk songs, and after buy my first electric guitar, so big heart rock guitarist, then and so on, blues, jazzy. And after I start to find a working, start to working with the sounds and make my own compositions, so I just... I realized that not only guitars and the basic instruments like drums, bass, I don't know, keyboards. It was something like basic stuff, but I needed more colors, you know. From one side you can use it by synthesizers, but from second side it's very chemically. So for this reason I'm using the natural color of the instruments, because the sound really gives you the power of the live record.
And do you have any idea how many instruments you can play?
I can tell you what I'm not able to play and of what I use my friends, musicians, classical instruments, saxophone, trumpets, violins. So I could learn, but it will take time, and for this reason that I want to just record, so it's better for me just put notes and put the score to the musicians that they will record for me.
Right, well, Sveta, thank you very much for inviting me here into your studio and showing me some of these instruments that you play. We're going to end the program now with a composition by you. It's on one of your CDs. Tell me what this is.
We can just choose the genesis. It's this winning song for this USA songwriting competition. I was just thinking about what was on the beginning. Like God said, it was the word, and what's the word? It's the sound. So I was just trying to connect all the instruments from around the world, put it together in one song, and build some composition.
And how many instruments feature on this song?
Oh, it's about 70 instruments.
70 instruments from around the world.
You can just, every listener can try to recognize which instrument and which era.
Okay, fantastic. So this is Genesis by Sveta. Sveta, thank you very much indeed.
And that edition of The Arts with Rob Cameron takes us to the end of today's program here on Radio Prague. If you have any comments or queries, don't hesitate to get in touch. You can write us a letter. The address for that, Vinohradská 12, 12099 Prague 2, or send an email. That address, english@radio.cz. But for now, from myself, Ian Willoughby, and all the team here in Prague, thanks for listening and have a great weekend. Goodbye.